Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is the Limar Technical Med. Limar Technical Med has been going strong for over 40 years. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we get together and have a little chit-chat and ask some questions, get some answers, discuss some concepts. Hopefully, we all learn a few things and are entertained. And I hope we have a good group for our Father's Day edition. Happy Father's Day to all you gentlemen with your own harmonics. Anyway, let me drop for a second, and I'll give you the usual link. Okay. If you need to reach me by email, that would be either for mailbag questions that you can't ask during the time that the technical med is on, or if you have topics for discussion, topics you would like to discuss, topics you'd like to hear discussed, topics you'd like to join into a discussion, or if you have puzzles to share. I'm always looking for interesting puzzles that kind of exercise our brain cells. Or if you want me to tap all WS2N on the shoulder and ask them to take a look-see at some NASA space-related story and comment, my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. Polls is spacenetreport@gmail.com. I have a link page of all kinds of interesting articles. So if you're curious, they're available 24/7, any old time. You just type into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com. That'll bring you to my link page. We have a chat room available. If you would like to enter the chat room, you can get there by typing into your browser, chat.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to the chat room. Summertime, it's very active, very lively. We also have an audio stream, so if you know someone who is either not in radio contact with the repeater, doesn't have Echolink or some other way of getting into the repeater, it streams on the internet. You just type into your browser, technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you with the audio stream. And I try and keep that live for most of the week. Also, want to remind people, Mike, KC2NJI, has a great archive of the technical net going far back to December 2006. His site is called amateurradio.tv, and he has over a million visitors, so make it a million and one. So that's my link. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you my plans for tonight. Okay, it's going to be a regular night, nothing special as far as I'm aware of. We will ask for questions. Hopefully, there'll be some questions. It would be nice if the first few questions are amateur radio related. But as time goes on, you can broaden it to any field of science and technology and even medicine. We do not treat nor diagnose over the radio, but you can bring up a subject, and if I'm able to, I'll help. And hopefully have some comments to be made. That should take us to around 10:15 when Paul, WS2N, will give us the SpaceNet report. That should take us to 11 p.m. where I'll return and wish you all a happy week and close the net for this week. So if all the laws of physics maintain themselves and radios work and repeaters work and I work, that's the idea. That's the plan. So with that in mind, is there anyone out there with any questions, comments for discussion or what have you for the technical net tonight? Give me your first name and your call sign.
Whiskey 2, Bravo Zulu.
Rich recognized. Anyone else want to put their name on the list tonight? Okay, hopefully as time goes on, people will have some questions. We'll be asking again as the technical net progresses. So, Rich, W2BZ, you're number 1, 2, and 3 on the list there. What's your question or your comment for tonight?
Hello, Roy. Hello, everybody else. It's Father's Day, so maybe people are still out with their kids. I just got home myself. I'm glad I got to catch the start of the TechNet. Anyway, I have a very fundamental, very basic question about how RF works, specifically the carrier wave. When the human voice is spoken into a microphone, it creates a signal. That signal gets, in turn, transformed into what's known as the carrier wave, if I have that right. And what gets attached to that carrier wave is the data of the signal, I guess the voice. And then modulation works on the carrier wave to either frequency modulate it or amplitude modulate it. I just don't exactly understand how the carrier wave gets formed and what works upon it to carry the data, attach it to the carrier wave, if that's the right way of saying it even, and then have that carrier wave be modulated. You know, I understand it sort of a little bit intellectually, but I really don't have a grasp on the fundamental way a carrier is created and then manipulated. Is that clear at all, Roy? Go ahead.
Yeah, that's perfectly clear to me, Rich. One little thing I want to point out. For the most part, the carrier wave, if there is a carrier wave, is there from the moment that you key up. You could remain completely silent if you are sending an amplitude-modulated signal or a frequency-modulated signal, and you say absolutely nothing, you will emit a carrier wave. You'll see it on your amplifier, you'll see it on your watt meter. It's a definite signal. So the carrier wave does not require any information in order to be launched. It's kind of a bookmark. It sits there unchanging in frequency and amplitude as long as you don't apply any external audio energy to modulate the carrier. So you understand that concept?
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
Yeah, and good evening, Roy. Yeah, it sounds like you're describing like an FM transmission. When you push the button, a carrier is going out. You know, you can see you're transmitting away. But when you're on single sideband, you look at your meter, nothing's happening when you key up. And then when I start talking, 1, 2, 3, you'll see that you'll see it's going out at that point. So it depends on what Rich is really asking about, I think. You know what I mean? Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, I agree with you in principle, Paul. Notice that I did not say single sideband. I said amplitude modulation, because single sideband adds a little bit of complication to the mix. Part of the transmitter chain for a single sideband is where the carrier wave itself is extracted out. So single sideband doesn't have any carrier. So if you do not modulate a single sideband signal, you don't get any kind of signal out. It's silent. You can't tune a Pi network by keying it up in single sideband, whereas you can if you key it up in CW or in AF, because those have carriers. So single sideband doesn't really have a carrier. It slices the carrier out and then slices one of the two sidebands out to just give you either an upper or a lower sideband signal.
Very good. I didn't hear you say AM. Missed that. But, okay, real good. Yeah, with AM, of course, you're going to have the carrier and you're going to have the upper and lower being transmitted. Back to your right.
Okay, very good. By the way, AC2GS, in case it's been 10 minutes. But the point that I'm trying to get across is that without modulation, the carrier has no information. and is stable. So the amplitude is stable for an amplitude modulated carrier. The frequency is stable for a frequency modulated carrier. Now, when you introduce an audio signal envelope into the carrier, depending upon how you're modulating the carrier, different things happen. In amplitude modulation, the amplitude of the audio signal is superimposed on the carrier. So when the wave audio wave is high, it's a high amplitude carrier. When it's low, it's a low amplitude carrier. And so the amplitude modulates between 100% and zero, depending upon the audio signal that you're using to modulate the amplitude modulated carrier. In frequency modulation, it's different. The amplitude of the audio signal does not change the amplitude of the carrier wave. It does shift the frequency of the carrier wave. And so that's why we call it frequency modulation, because it's shifting the frequency. The louder the signal, the higher the amplitude of the signal, the more it deviates the frequency from that initial carrier frequency. So in one case, you're keeping the amplitude constant and changing the frequency. That would be FM. The other, you're doing the opposite. You're keeping the frequency unchanging, but changing the amplitude. Now, how that tends to affect these types of modulations and the sidebands that they tend to create is an extra layer of complication.
Right, maybe what I need to ask, which would clear it up, is exactly what takes place when a carrier is modulated, whether it's amplitude modulated or frequency modulated, what's taking place to that carrier wave?
Okay, well, you're changing it in one way or another. The carrier wave only has three characteristics that you could really do anything about. You can change its frequency, you can change its phase, and you can change its amplitude. So in the case of amplitude modulation, you will be affecting the carrier wave's amplitude. And in the case of frequency modulation, you will be changing the carrier wave's frequency.
Okay, so let's take AM. So amplitude, how does that translate into transmittable signal, a voice? So a voice goes in, the carrier wave, I guess, is generated by an oscillator? Let me ask that question. Is the carrier wave generated by the oscillator?
Yes.
So an oscillator generates the carrier wave, and then the carrier wave, the amplitude, in other words, to use the layman's term, the loudness or softness of what's hitting that carrier wave is modulating the carrier wave, and then what in turn does the carrier wave do after it gets modulated? If I'm correct in saying, it gets altered. Let's not use modulated. It gets altered by what? Another signal, or the same signal that generated the carrier wave? What causes the modulation?
The modulation is your voice, but let's kind of simplify it and say not a voice. Let's just say you have a piece of equipment that generates a 1,000 cycle per second tone electronically. So you put it into a speaker and you hear the 1,000. If you introduce that as your microphone input to an amplitude modulated signal, what's going to happen is the carrier wave's envelope, if you think in terms of just an envelope where if it was a constant, if it was unmodulated, the amplitude would be constant, unchanging. Now you're superimposing that 1,000 cycle per second audio tone to it. So what's happening is the amplitude or the watts or the power or however you want to describe it is no longer going straight across in the middle. It's going up, then it goes even down, then it goes up, then it goes down, then it goes up and down, and it does that 1,000 times every second. And that's what's creating that 1,000 cycle hum on the AM receiver on the other end. Yes, Wesley.
You don't mind, I have some corrections.
Feel free.
Generator and oscillator. There is a difference between them. So, an oscillator is the device used to produce periodic signal waves from usually sine or square wave, but anyway, what is characteristic for it? It can produce stable periodic signal only one waveform for the given design or circuit. The generator produces a signal with different frequencies. It could have a different waveform and shape, but that term is reserved for wide range of frequencies. So we're dealing with generator at different frequencies to create a signal. Unless we use an oscillator that is mixing the signal and giving us desired frequency, but then we need to have a series of oscillators. So that's my few points, 5 cents about it. Thank you.
Okay, I appreciate it, Wesley, but I tend to think you're actually kind of complicating things. All that I was trying to introduce into this discussion is rather than the complex waveform of the human speech, to kind of get you the simplest type of waveform that will produce a modulated signal. Now, you could use an oscillator to make the 1,000 hertz. You could make a generator to make the 1,000 hertz. I didn't bother to explain what was creating the 1,000 hertz because I, again, don't think it's necessary for the discussion that the subject that Rich was bringing up, which is how a carrier wave is ultimately modulated and what that means and what that looks like and sounds like and is. And I'm just trying to make a very simplified image that you now have an oscillator's output that is being modulated 1,000 times each second in its amplitude. And that would be a very simple monotone AM signal.
Yeah, but the question was, what makes a carrier? That was the question he asked. So it's not the oscillator, it's a generator. Unless you decide to have a series of oscillators for that purpose and a mixer interchange.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, and you could use an oscillator circuit. Radios, the transmitters, use a variable frequency oscillator circuit. You don't necessarily... I think we're kind of going into word meanings and such, but I don't know if he's that interested in the word use of the subject as opposed to what's going on in internal, that you do have this alternating RF current that unmodulated is stable. And when modulated, it either changes its phase, amplitude, or frequency.
I agree with you to the point that we're talking about the man and not interested if it's a woman or man, or male or female, then the man would actually satisfy the discussion. It was a particular question, and I was trying to be particular. Maybe I'm wrong. Somebody can correct me. Thank you.
WYTU.
Yes.
Hi, folks. This is Mike, WYTU. Let me take a shot at it there, Roy, if I could, please.
Certainly.
Okay, thank you. I'd like, first of all, to have Rich, the gentleman is Rich who asked the question, I believe. Forget the word carrier for a moment. and I'm just going to talk about two voltage sources, or two current sources. Let's talk two voltage sources. One of them I'll call V1. It is going to have an RF frequency associated with it. Wesley, I don't care how you generate it, whether it's done at the output frequency or whether it's done at a lower frequency and mixed up. But I'm going to assume for the moment that you got one source of voltage that is a constant frequency and it's a constant amplitude. Okay? So far, so good? Wesley?
Yes, I agree.
Okay, now I'm going to take a second voltage, or maybe a multitude of second voltages. I'm going to call it V2. And you know, I'm going to call that the message function. Okay, you want to call it the modulation, you want to call it speech, you want to call it audio. Right now, I just want to call it a message function to keep it general. Roy, I've got to disagree. There's only two ways to change a carrier. You can change its amplitude, and you can change its phase, and that's it. If you change its phase with an integration like you do in calculus, well, then you got frequency modulation. But there's only two ways you can change a sine wave, either change its gain or change its phase, and that's it. So let's talk amplitude modulation for a second, and then maybe I'll depart a little bit, and we'll get into single sideband and the other ones. But, Rich, what we're going to do is we're going to take this message function, and I'm going to find a way to take that message function and send it through a variable gain amplifier. The gain of this amplifier is going to be an exact representation of what the level of this message function is. Okay, so if you can picture that, the amplifier itself, its gain is going to change as a function of this message function. Let me draw. Now I'm going to take the first voltage, which you want to call a carrier, and I'm going to send that into this variable gain amplifier. So you can see what's going on here. The message function, as it's changing itself, it's changing the gain of the amplifier, and therefore the output of the amplifier is going to be a representation of the first voltage, which you want to call a carrier, that's fine, as it is altered in level by the second voltage function, the message function. And that is going to be called amplitude modulation. And again, Wesley, I don't care whether you generate this at low frequency and mix it up, or whether or not you actually have a way to do it at the actual output frequency. You are thereby simply changing the gain of the carrier, now I said the word, of the carrier in accordance with the level of the message function. If I can send it over to Rich and see if he got that so far. This is WY2U.
Addition.
I do have that. So V2, the message, what you're saying is, let's call it the message wave. The amplifier works upon the carrier wave to change its amplitude. Let me ask this question. What would happen if you didn't have the V1 or the first wave, the carrier wave? That would help me understand it. If you didn't have that carrier wave, what would the message wave, for lack of a better term, it wouldn't have anything to act upon. Is that correct? Why does that message wave, this is where it gets confusing with me, why does it need the carrier wave or the V1?
Wesley did have a comment, and I'll give it right over to him. Simply because the message function is too low in frequency usually to be transmitted by a reasonably sized antenna. The reason why you need the carrier wave or something that resembles something at an RF frequency is to allow the message function itself to propagate. Now, you're listening to my speech. I'm speaking into a microphone. A male voice probably goes from about maybe 300 hertz to maybe 3 kilohertz or something like that. Certainly, it's an audio range of frequencies. It is not very convenient to take a microphone and amplify it up to 1,000 watts and connect it to an antenna. Now, you can do that in theory, but the antenna would have to be an astronomical size because, as you know, for an antenna to operate reasonably efficiently, it has to be approximately of the same order in size as the wavelength of the frequency that you're trying to send. Now, audio has wavelengths of thousands of miles. It would be impractical to make a 1,000-mile-long antenna. It would be more practical to make an antenna a few meters long. Well, then I have to figure out some way to get that message function on a signal that can be propagated by a much, much smaller antenna. Rich, do you you, and I guess back to the net, because I also think Wesley has something to say. But Rich first, please. WY2U.
That clears it up a lot. That clears it up a lot. I'm just wondering, could you further define message function?
Let me get into the net first, and then I'll come around and pick it up in a little bit. Back to you, Rick.
Hey, good job.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Mike. I just wanted to put in two cents worth. I agree with you that phase and frequency are very closely related, but, you know, if people kind of look things up and they see, you know, phase shift keying is theoretically using phase modulation. Now, there's frequency shift keying that gets you the same place that uses frequency modulation. So, ultimately, if you work with them, they're kind of equivalent, but if you see it in the literature, you will see phase modulation mentioned. So I just wanted to put that down. Also, I wanted to point out that even if it was theoretically possible to transmit RF in the 300 to 3,000 cycle per second, which kind of is difficult, you'd have everyone transmitting on the same exact frequency, and you'd be back to the good old spark gap days, where you have no selectivity, you have no frequencies. You just have one channel and no more in the local area. But, you know, that's not possible because the laws of physics don't really lend itself to sending RF at audio frequencies. Wesley, you wanted to say something?
He's doing a great job. And your team did it help. Let's say we have a car here and we have two sidebands. And let's say we color one sideband with red and one with white. So now we have a car here with two sidebands. One sideband, the part is red. Actually, the carrier is useful information. And the carrier is not needed if we can precisely tune to the frequency. And other sideband, it's just a copy of that red sideband. So the left is copy of right or reverse. And we decided to have upper sideband on 14 megahertz. So the other part is not needed. But the point of that person is that we, but of the audio bandwidth, we have a 6 kilohertz of RF and 100 watts, and we spread over red. We cut now target only 3% with a single sideband A3. It doesn't make any difference. The only thing is that we are saving a lot of power on carrier. Now we're cutting off one copy of the bandwidth, which is left bandwidth, the white one. And we have a red one, the upper one. Now we can transmit on 14 megahertz and 21 megahertz and 10 meters. But if we want to go to 3.5 megahertz, we actually use the other sideband. So that's short of it, but it's point of to be told about it.
Okay, Wesley. Again, I think you're complicating things. Rich primarily really seems to be interested in what's going on with the carrier wave during modulation. And you were picking the one form of transmission where the carrier waves are extracted, removed, and thrown in the garbage. So it's a moot point what's going on with the carrier wave when you're dealing with single sideband, because it's been extracted in one of the circuits to provide either the upper or the lower sideband. So I think for Rich's interest, we should kind of stick to frequency modulation and amplitude modulation, in which there is a carrier in the signal all the way to the receiver.
I'm going to continue, if I could, there, Roy, WY2U.
Sure, Mike.
Okay, thank you very much. So, Rich, what I described to you is what is called conventional amplitude modulation, where you have a variable gain amplifier whose gain is a function of some message function. The message function is being impressed onto this, I got to use the word again, carrier frequency, and you're producing a conventional amplitude modulated signal. What Wesley is talking about is what does it look like on the signal that you generated? Well, if you're looking at it on an oscilloscope, you see what it, you see a carrier, which is very, very high frequency, and if you have the frequency, I should say the oscilloscope is set up correctly, you see an envelope that represents the message function. If you took a look at the same signal on a so-called spectrum analyzer, you would see the carrier as something of a blob of energy in the middle of some spectrum, energy above and energy below. If you happen to have a message function consisting of only a single sine wave, like Roy was describing a while ago, let's say a 1 kilohertz sine wave, you would see a high-level carrier signal at some frequency in the middle. Above it, you'd see the carrier frequency plus 1 kilohertz, which would be called the upper sideband. And on the other side of the carrier, you'd see a 1 kilohertz signal 1 kilohertz lower than the carrier, and that's called the lower sideband. Let me drop a second. Everything sounds wonderful so far, except you have one very, very basic problem. Amplitude modulation is very inefficient. If you look at the power budget of what you just generated, you find out that most of the energy, most of the power is contained in the carrier. And let's say you got a 100-watt carrier for argument's sake. It takes 50 watts, believe it or not, if you want to go through the math. It takes half the amount of power in the message function to completely modulate by 100% an amplitude modulated signal. That means you need 50 watts of message function, of which 25 watts goes into the upper sideband and 25 watts goes into the lower sideband. So you need 150 watts of energy. Actually, you need a lot more if you want to talk peak envelope power. That's another story. You need 150 watts of energy to recover 25 watts of message function. And if you're really clever and figure out some very clever way of detecting it, you can use both upper and lower sideband. But it's very inefficient. There are much, much better ways to do it, and that's why Roy was describing, or I should say Wesley was describing, this so-called double sideband suppressed carrier and or single sideband suppressed carrier. Because when you eliminate the big culprit that generates most of the power, you can put most of the available power where you want it in one of the sidebands. The only sophistication that has to be done if you do that technique is somehow at the receiving side, you got to put it back in. Not too much of a big problem with today's circuitry. So back to Roy, WY2U.
Okay, very good. Yeah, single sideband was a great breakthrough. Some people had to be pulled kicking and screaming, and there are still guys there on 40 and 75 that like their AM more than single sidebands, and other guys who kind of confound the concept of single sideband by using extended single sideband so that they can take up twice the amount of bandwidth. Do all kinds of curious, interesting things with it. But anyway, Rich, has your question been answered, or does it offer you more questions to be asked?
Well, you know me, Roy. More questions to be asked. Mike, the message function, how is that generated, and what happens to it after it modulates the carrier?
Well, you're listening to the message function right now, my speech. That's what you're listening to. If you happen to be into television or the so-called conventional television, the message function would be video superimposed with audio. So the message function is whatever you want to broadcast. Right now it happens to me, my speech. When you're talking, it is your speech. If you're talking about digital signals, it's ones and zeros generating that represent some kind of telemetry of some sort, but it could be data. So the message function is itself exactly what it means. It's the broadcast material that you want to send over to be received. Rich?
Okay, and the carrier then what? Amplifies the message function? Is that what it does? Is that what its sole purpose is, to amplify it?
No, sir, not at all. The message function is superimposed on the carrier so that it alters either the amplitude of the carrier, as I was describing for amplitude modulation, or it could alter the angle of the carrier. And if you do it without integration, it's frequency modulation. If you do it with integration, it's phase modulation. But again, there's only two ways to change a carrier. You can change it up and down or back and forth. You can change its amplitude or phase, and that's it. So the message function doesn't amplify the carrier. It alters it by whatever modulation scheme you are using. Back to you, Rich.
Okay, so it gets combined with the carrier. And it's the carrier's function from then on to the output stages. It's the carrier's function to, well, what I'm a little confused about is you said that, you know, if you didn't have the carrier, you know, you'd have to have an enormous amount of antenna or enormous amount of power to do the same job that the carrier does. Maybe you explained it, Mike. I'll ask you one more time, though. The carrier, how does it manipulate that message function signal to the point where it's palatable to either the antenna or the rest of the power requirements in the transmitter? How does the carrier do that?
Okay, I don't want to lay on you a bunch of heavy math, but consider this. The message function, if you look at this spectrum, not on a scope, but on a spectrum analyzer, you do what is known as a Fourier transform. It's a special mathematical manipulation that takes the original voltage or message function itself and break it up into its frequency components and how these frequency components vary in amplitude. If you look at this message function, you find out that it is centered directly at 0 hertz, at DC. In other words, a spectrum analyzer that can be viewed at that goes down to DC would see my message function on one side going from plus 300 hertz to plus 3 kilohertz. That's what my speech is doing approximately right now. And if you had the ability to design a spectrum analyzer to really look at a Fourier transform, you see that the exact mirror image is happening on the other side of DC, negative frequency. Now, we don't talk negative frequency. It doesn't exist theoretically. I should say it exists only theoretically, but not practically. But it does exist as a mass function. What the carrier does, very simply, it takes that DC term that was right in the middle of this plus and minus spectrum of the message function, and it takes the message function and multiplies it up to the carrier frequency. So you got exactly the same spectrum, but now it's centered at a much, much higher frequency. If you're looking at, let's say, a 20-meter signal with amplitude modulation, you'd see on a spectrum analyzer a center carrier frequency of 14 megahertz, an upper side band of speech above it, and a lower side band of speech below it, just like you would have seen had you taken this message function and put it on DC. So think of it as the carrier just translating this message function up to a new frequency. How's that do, Rich, okay?
Perfect, Mike. That's perfect. So it transforms the signal into a higher frequency. Is that the, do I have that right? The purpose of the carrier is to create a higher frequency from the message function?
I don't like exactly the way you said it, but yes, I think you have it in principle. That's exactly what happened. So WY2U, back to
net. Okay, let me just make sure I have it. Okay. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of analogies. You could use the analogy that the radio wave is an envelope and your audio is the letter in the envelope. Once you put the letter in the envelope, you've changed what the envelope and the contents are, and you put it in an envelope because that's the best means to convey that information. If you left it as an electromagnetic wave in the spectrum of audio signals, you couldn't really propagate it very well, efficiently. So you bring up the frequency to a point where it's very easy to transfer the radio wave
from you to the next person, and you've included a modification of that carrier in such a way as to convey the message in that envelope.
Hey, now I got amplitude modulation. As far as I know, frequency modulation came after amplitude modulation and improved on it. Mike, would that be a correct characterization that it improved on it? And if so, how so?
Well, it's interesting because history sort of says that FM was the right thing invented for the wrong reason. So what they tried to do was they wanted to take a conventional AM broadcast band type of system. You know, they had a number of stations that operated between 500 kilohertz and 1600 kilohertz, and that's been around since the 1907s, I guess, or thereabouts. So scientists said, well, what we want to try to do is we want to figure out a way to generate a better sounding signal, because in frequency modulation, theoretically, I can deviate a frequency out to infinity, believe it or not. And this way I can use very, very high frequency modulation tones. And by the way, AM is only limited to about up to maybe 5 kilohertz. So that's why FM sounds better than AM, because frequencies above 5 kilohertz, like in violins and cymbals and all of that type of thing, they're cut off in the AM band and you never hear them. So if you wanted to try to broadcast symphony orchestration down at the AM band, you can forget about it. It's not going to sound very good. Let me drop a second.
Correction.
I'll take the correction first there, Wesley, if you want. Go ahead.
It is the bandwidth. So, as well, it's not quite large. If you have radio, it's something you have. It's not the same as the commercial 25 kilohertz or 50 kilohertz. The same is with 6 kilohertz versus 5 kilohertz. But the more your power is concentrated on that narrow signal, so you actually gain. I think you're 97% of your carrier up to 2% in single side band. 30% left, you're cutting one side band, and you have one side band only. All of the 100 watts power goes only to the signal. That's why it goes far. But in commercial business of radio, it's not the distance that matters. It's the quality. Correct me if I'm wrong. And
I lost a little bit of what you were trying to say there, Wesley, somewhere. No, all I was trying to say was people crave high fidelity. And originally in the 1920s, scientists were trying to figure out a way to take high fidelity type signals, which have frequency components past 10 kilohertz, you know, like in high frequency tones in a violin or a cymbal or something like that. And they say, gee, why can't we come up with a scheme that takes these high-frequency signals and jams them down into the 10 kilohertz bandwidth associated with AM? So they didn't know anything about Carson's rule or Bessel functions. They perhaps knew about Bessel functions, but they didn't know that they pertain to frequency modulation. I didn't want to get into that level of sophistication in this discussion. But anyway, that's why I was saying it's the right thing invented for the wrong reason. So let me drop a minute.
Great answer, thank you.
Okay, so what they tried to do is they tried to say, all right, since we now know we can take high-frequency signals, we're going to jam these into a carrier and only deviate the carrier by a couple of kilohertz. Therefore, since the frequency deviation of the carrier is going to be less than my allotted FCC bandwidth of 10 kilohertz, we can make this thing sound great and have a narrow-band signal, and people can listen to high-quality audio and broadcast down the AM. Well, guess what, Rich? It didn't work that way. Because they didn't know that the mathematics associated with FM dictated the fact that a lot more sidebands, not just two, like in the case of a regular AM type of a conventional AM system, a lot more sidebands are generated due to this mystical thing called the Bessel function that required a lot more bandwidth than an AM allotment, the FCC allotment of AM was allowed to do. So it didn't work. They had to figure out a better way. So they decided, well, look, if we can't put the stuff on that band, on the AM broadcast band, we better find a better band to stick it in. Therefore, we can operate much, much wider bandwidth. After they finally realized that this thing called the Bessel function required the bandwidth that it did, they completely understood the problem. And that happened in the 1930s, I guess, about 1939, commercial broadcasting started to become available. And interestingly enough, it shouldn't work because the scientists didn't realize that what was going on was something called capture, where it looked like if you make bandwidth too wide in an AM broadcast type of situation, let me drop. You're not gaining anything because all you're doing is letting more noise get into the detector and you're degrading the signal-to-noise ratio. Now, FM requires a lot more bandwidth in order to generate the signal to begin with. So how the heck can FM, which requires more bandwidth, sound better and have less noise than an AM signal? Well, it turns out that we got two bandwidths. There's one before detection, which is what the actual message function frequency-modulated signal needs, but there's one after the detector, which could be much, much narrower. And by making that ratio just right, that's called beta, or the frequency modulation index, by making that beta unit just right, you can get improvement, signal-to-noise improvement over AM. And all of this is done without any additional power put in the carrier. The carrier is generated at constant level. The energy from the modulation function, or the baseband function, or the message function, is simply used to alter the phase of the carrier, or in this case, the frequency of the carrier. The amplitude stays constant, therefore the power stays constant, and it is a much better sounding system. Did I go a little too fast there, Rich? Because, boy, otherwise the math gets a little rough. Back to you, Rich, for a quick one, WI2U.
Oh. If I don't understand it 100%, I understand it 95% more than I did before the start of the TechNet, Mike. I really thank you for that. I wonder, just this last question, the additional required bandwidth, is there fixed parameters where the message function modulates the carrier in frequency modulation? Is there a fixed frequency width or bandwidth to that modulation?
Yes, that's dictated by the FCC in terms of where the broadcast is to be associated with. For example, on the conventional FM band, where you get all your music and talk radio, you're allowed to, I'm not talking FM stereo now, because that's got another different twist to it. You're allowed 250 kilohertz worth of bandwidth, plus or minus 125. For the kind of communication that we're doing right now on 2 meters, which is also governed by the FCC, bandwidth is a lot narrower. So the message functions that we can transmit on our 2 meter and ham bands is not going to be as high fidelity-ish as the FCC allows on the lower commercial FM band, because the bandwidth here is only much, much, much narrower, limiting us to frequency deviation and limiting us to the maximum frequency that we can transmit on these types of systems. So it depends, again, on where you're doing it. FM broadcast band allows 250 kilohertz. We now, I think we're under the 15 kilohertz rule. Wesley, you probably know that. I forget if it's 15 kilohertz nowadays or 25 kilohertz. But we must maintain narrow band conditions even on 2 meter FM. Wesley, what is the number? I don't know if that was Wesley or if there's something on the repeater that shouldn't be there. Roy?
Yeah, I that's just random noise. Give a minute or two, see if Wesley's still with us.
I know he was having some mic troubles a little while ago.
Let me ask this question. what's the need for, you know, wideband FM and narrowband FM? Why does there have to be two?
High fidelity. Wideband FM will transmit much wider frequencies. So if you want to broadcast music, stereo quality music, and symphony orchestra quality music, you need wide bandwidth. If you all you care about is speech and narrow band message functions, well then the FM bandwidth can be a lot narrower, as is the case on 2 meter FM.
But don't we as ham radio operators have the ability to switch between the two? Because I know, you know, on my transceivers, you know, it asks whether it's WFM or narrow NFM.
Well, you got me there. Roy, are you I think Rich is talking about wideband FM for, like, some of the digital modes. Because I was talking about the difference between commercial FM and this type of FM. So, Roy, you might be talking about the data modes. Is that true? Or am I missing something myself?
I think he's alluding to the fact that because of some commercial rule with the FCC, they want to get more channels per band. So they've unfortunately used narrow FM twice. So there's wide FM, there's narrow FM, and then there's what's still called narrow FM, but it's half the width. So I think he's alluding to those two variations on narrow FM that the FCC put through on commercial bands.
I think Mike is right. I think I'm seeing that on the digital modes, not on the voice modes.
Actually, you know what? I'm not sure. Roy's explanation sounds plausible, too, but it does. With regard to what the FCC rules are, I thought when we're talking about speech, you have to be within, I think the number is 15 kilohertz, but don't hold me to it. And then I thought if you wanted to change modes and go over to one of the so-called digital modes, they allow you 25 kilohertz. But maybe I'm missing it too, because the rules seem to have been changing volatilely, is that a made-up word? Over the last couple of years. WY2U, back to net.
And 2KW.
Alan recognized, yes, volatility. Yeah, it's all over the place. I mean, GMRS, I think, allows for a 25 kilohertz bandwidth for their FM modulation. So it's sort of a confusing free-for-all. But, Alan, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, if repeaters are separated by 15 kilohertz, and the bandwidth can't be 15 kilohertz, I believe it's 5 kilohertz.
No, that's frequency deviation. It is 15 kilohertz, and there's some guard band in between, as far as I know.
I don't understand, because we got 50. We got repeaters every 15 kilohertz.
Maybe it's 10 kilohertz with guard band. I don't know. Now I'm wondering what the real number is. Frequency deviation is 5 kilohertz maximum. That I can tell you. It may be 10 kilohertz with 5 kilohertz band, guard band. So that needs to be looked up.
E2SDP?
Yes, Chris. By the way, I know in England, for some strange reason, they have different rules. It's 12.5 kilohertz for 2 meters, and it's 25 kilohertz for 70 centimeters. Just confused everything.
Hey, Roy, K2SPP. Chris, I know on scanners there is a wide and narrow setting for each channel that you put in you want to scan. And a lot of commercial repeaters, so for example, the Suffolk County Police repeaters, they use some odd spacing. If you look at the frequencies that are in the P25 system they use, it is odd spacing, and it's probably, I think they're using the narrow. But there is a difference. I don't know what the difference, you know, why there's a difference, or if it has anything to do with rules, but it's probably just squeezing bandwidth into their narrow channel they have.
Yeah, it gets confusing, but it was my understanding that commercial frequency bands, the FCC demanded that they shift from what we call narrow FM to even narrower FM so that they could squeeze more channels into the same frequency range. So it's led to a lot of confusion because in the old days it made a lot of sense. Broadcast FM was wideband, our broadcast was narrowband, but now there's a very narrow brand. And that kind of goes back to a couple years ago, we were talking here on the Technical Net about some Baofeng radios with very low output, and the thought was presented that maybe they defaulted to the commercial narrow band frequency deviation, and that's why they sounded much worse than other Baofengs that were randomly set for amateur radio narrow bands with FM. Yes, Jeff.
Jeez. Hi, everybody. I have had these 10 Baofeng bands of funk for the years, and I have a service monitor. I'm setting up my system. I have my own little system, and the audio on my Baofeng was kind of low. And I looked at my service monitor, and it was like 2.5 kc. I said, oh, that, no wonder my audio is low on my system. I looked in the setup on the Baofeng, and they have a wide microphone setting there, and a narrow setting. So it was set on the narrow, and I changed it to the wide, and it came up to back to the normal ham bandwidth of 5 kc on the deviation on my modulation. Go ahead.
Okay, well, we were talking about that a couple years ago, Dick was as well. And you're corroborating that. I mean, the problem is that, I can't expect the Chinese to get the terms quite correct. But, I mean, I think, generally speaking, when we talk about our FM bandwidth, we tend to call it narrow as well. Again, the problem is that the FCC wanted to design an even narrower bandwidth FM transmission mode. And so they're using the same adjective, unfortunately, which is going to confuse everyone.
That's correct, Roy. That's correct. They made a radio that had super narrow deviation, and they just didn't change how they described it. So it's available on the mail phone. You can change it. Amateur radio deviation setup of 5 kc approximately deviation.
Okay, it just seems odd that that all of their factory made stuff doesn't default to the same setting, because a lot of the Baofeng sound reasonable, so a lot of them are just randomly set for wider bandwidth, so it works out better in those ways. People just have to be aware of that little problem with their $35 radios. But, it's nice to have Baofengs. I wouldn't depend my life on it, but, they're disposable. If it fell into the river, I wouldn't cry too much. If any of my more expensive HDs would fall into the river, I might shed a tear or two.
2STP.
Yes, Chris.
Thanks, Roy. If I'm not mistaken, there is, correct me if I'm wrong, there is no rule for the width of a signal in amateur radio. Isn't that correct? I believe somebody much smarter than me told me that. There is no rule that says it can't be wider than X. But you have the other rules that say you can't interfere with other stations. But is that true?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. When you go from the CW side to the phone side, there might be some types of rules, because I remember people getting headaches trying to figure out how to cram data modes into that section of the band plan. For the most part, as long as you stay in the phone section, there is, as far as I'm aware, nothing that specifies the bandwidth. And that's why there are people with extended single sideband transmissions, where they will put out a signal that could be something like 6 kilocycles in bandwidth. You just kind of annoy your neighbors and step on their toes. And so you have to rely on band plans for where AM modulation is acceptable and other places where it's verboten.
And